Blog Talk Radio.
Pump Day!
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio, Tremont Says So. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and baby, Jesus! Help us!
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Abbott, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick Radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it. Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope on this cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that guy, you homie. Fuck that. Black D. Out.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J. Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Oh, shit!
It is Wednesday, September 11, 2013. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J. Cat Morris. I got a nice show for you guys tonight. First week of football kicked off. I'm super excited about it. I'm going to get into some wrestling later on. I figured, better than just hear me ramble for an hour, why don't I get someone on with me? So I'd like to welcome back to the show a good friend, Lane. Some people may know him. Many, many people know him as Insane Lane. So welcome back to the show, Lane.
Hey, J-Cat, how you doing, my friend?
Good, man, good. So first week of football, brought you on, talk some football. I don't know about you, but I was couldn't have been more excited for any other event on TV. Finally here.
Totally agree with you. I've been looking forward to this time of year, the fall, the great weather, and can't forget the football. So I'm ready for it. So I'm just totally excited for it that it's finally here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I figure we'll run down the games that happened, talk about the games that are going to happen next week, and the whole thing like that. So we started off the season, kicked off on Thursday. We had the Ravens and Broncos. Initially, it would have been a home game for the Ravens, but they had the Baltimore Orioles refused to give up the playing space. I think what it is they play across the street from each other. Do you know if that's right? Or
I don't know. It might be, a lot of venues are like real close together. I know when my time's in Philly, all the sports venues are like real close together. Here in Atlanta, Turner Field is several miles away from the Georgia Dome. So, I mean, I guess it just depends. I don't know. I mean, I guess they couldn't work it out, and they had to go to Denver.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that type of thing. They're in the playoff hunt or whatever. Don't really watch baseball, so I don't know. But
they need to crush Davis, I guess, to hit more homers, I guess, so they didn't want to give up the time, I guess.
Right. Yeah, so anyway, the Ravens go out to the Broncos Stadium to, move their home game on the road, I guess you call it, and, kick off the football season, playoff rematch. Manning went in there and just lit them up. Seven touchdowns, 462 yards. I don't know what else to say about that. I mean, it was just a display. By Peyton Manning just did exactly what you'd expect him to do. And having Wes Welker is just the guy's used to.
Yeah, I mean, he had Welker in there to catch those short-range passes, and so they kept their concentration on Welker. That allowed Demaryius Thomas just to go absolutely bonkers, and he threw was throwing bombs at Demaryius. I think he averaged 30 yards a catch during that game, and scored two touchdowns. Like I said, Peyton just ran wild all over, man. It was the Baltimore. Really misses Ed Reed back there. Captain in the backfield back there, and I guess it's just kind of weird without them having Ray Lewis in there and in the middle of their little circle jerk hyping up the team to get them ready to go out there on the field. Because I mean, hell, it's been 15 years since they haven't had them on there since. I guess I don't know how many years exactly, but Ray Lewis was like their Flavor Flav, man. He was the hype man.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They didn't have him to hype up,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was definitely the leader of the defense.
Yeah, I mean, Flacco, he had a pretty good passing game. Completion percentage-wise wasn't good. And the rushing on both sides, wasn't very good. I mean, it was a very pass-happy game. Because, Flacco had about 350-plus yards at least. But like I said, he mm-hmm. also missed over half his – almost half – he basically missed half his passes.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually noticed that over the whole week. It was not a real run-friendly week.
No, it wasn't.
If you see a lot of the things – yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as we go, you're going to see a lot of that stuff because I was really surprised. A lot of the big backs just didn't have
mm-hmm.
the weeks you'd expect them to have.
Mm-mm.
But, yeah, I mean, the Ravens, I think, really have a rebuilding process to go through. Their defense needs a new identity altogether after, you said, 15
mm-hmm.
years or so.
Yeah.
So, they paid Flacco a lot of money, so they'll have him around for a while, that's for sure.
Yep.
So the Ravens started out 0-1 as the rest of the guys in that division did as well. But
yeah, I know. Everybody's tied up.
Yeah. The Broncos started out 1-0, and a lot of people are, calling them, it's only week one, but favorites mm-hmm. to win the AFC. So I guess we'll see. But,
I got a good friend that's saying they're going to the Super Bowl. I was like, well, you said that last year.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's really too early to call. Like I said, a lot of teams started great last year, and then they fell down the stretch. So, only time will tell. And like I said, it was a hell of a start by Peyton Manning, though. I would never have thought in a million years his first game out he'd chunk 460-some-odd yards and seven touchdowns. That was just unheard of. And I had Baltimore as my fantasy football defense, so I didn't get too much on that.
Right.
I was damn it.
Yeah, I have two fantasy squads, and the one I had Flacco as quarterback, and the other one I had Ray Rice as running back. So same kind of deal.
Yeah.
Next, you had the Pats and Bills, which I pretty much called from the start because they had the Pats favored by 10.5 points, and I just didn't buy it. I just really, they have a hard time playing Buffalo. At least one of the two games they play against Buffalo, it's a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
So, it really didn't surprise me to see the, barely pull it out towards the end against Buffalo.
Yeah. I mean, it was a hard-fought game, and Manuel really impressed me because, a lot of people were scratching their heads when the Bills drafted him as the first quarterback in the first round. Everybody was expecting Geno Smith to go in that round, and I was like, EJ Manuel, you know, and he did pretty good. He didn't throw for a whole lot of yards, but you know, he was pretty consistent and threw two touchdown passes, and like I said, he almost pulled out the win, but Spiller didn't have a really good game rushing the ball. He averaged under 2.5 yards a carry, and but Fred Jackson, you know, they split carries pretty good, and he picked up the slack on running the ball, and receiving. I think Fred Jackson led in receiving too, I thought the Bills hung in there with a very, very talented Patriots team, even without a Gronkowski there or even Aaron Hernandez, who we all know is incarcerated at the moment.
Sure. I mean, you know, between Gronkowski and Hernandez and, you know, you had obviously Wes Welker was
Wes Welker, yeah. Well, you know, they got Amendola there to replace Welker, but
right.
Amendola, as usual, he's got a very bad history of he's got a history of getting hurt, and he got hurt again in this game. But he had a really good game before he got hurt. So, but the other guys on our team stepped up and did the thing.
Do you know if he's out now or
Amendola? Well, they say he's less likely to play Thursday. He's got a groin injury. He didn't practice with the team today, he didn't practice with the team today. So they're pretty much counting him out. So he'll probably get another.
I better switch him off my fantasy squad before tomorrow's game.
Yeah, I had him on my fantasy squad too. I was thinking, Wes Welker too. Good pick. I'm smart.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, not too surprising. And I think, you know, with all those guys gone from the offense, their running game has kind of been suspect over the past couple of years, too. They might have a hard hill to climb.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady's
going to
be Tom Brady, but.
Yeah. Well, you talk about the Patriots run game?
Yeah, the Pats.
Well, they did all right last year. They had Stephen Ridley. He ran 1,000 yards, but the guys they had before, they had and they had Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and all them other guys kind of rotating around. They didn't really have a real strong – they didn't have a really go-to guy, but I didn't really see – I didn't see the game per se, but Ridley, I only think, got 9 carries, and Vereen, he's gone for the year. So at least for a while till he's on injury reserve. He won't be – what is it, week 12, week 11, he won't be back? Until
did he get hurt
then?
The first game or?
Vereen got hurt.
Yeah, because they got him down running 100 yards in the first game, so I guess he went out that game.
Yep. He got hurt. He did something. I don't know what exactly the injury was, but they had put him on IR. I guess Ridley's going to have to pick up the slack try to have another year like he had. At least the past hope so.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Pats is even though they're down, I mean, Tom Brady's going to be Tom Brady, so they're going to kind of find a way to compete. And up against the Jets and the Bills and the Dolphins as your other three teams, you're probably still going to see them, you know, come playoff time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, you can't really count them out. I mean, it's like if they lose somebody, they always replace somebody. And it's never some. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they bring in superstar guys. And they never really contribute. I mean, they had Albert Haynesworth, of course. He was a douchebag, and they had Chad Johnson, and he didn't do anything. But they always bring in like
small
role player guys, like Wes Welker. I mean, no one knew who Wes Welker was really until he got with the Patriots, and they turned him into a star. You know, it's just they get these key role playing guys who you know not really worried about. I mean, of course, you know they want to make money, but they want to play, and they get them. I mean, they, you know, and that's what they do. And they just got a nice little system there. And whatever they're doing, it works. I mean, you can hate Bill Belichick all you want for being cold and, you know, callous and whatnot. But, I mean, hell, he's the best coach. I think he's if not the best coach in the NFL, I mean, he's at least one of the top three.
Yeah, I think a lot of people hate him. I don't think a single one of them are Patriots fans because
yeah, exactly.
He does what he has to do for that team to win.
Exactly.
So, next game, we had the Bengals and the Bears. It was kind of a shootout. I really didn't know how to call either one of these teams. Matt Forte was really supposed to blow up. You know, he came out with 50 yards. Green Ellis had 25 yards, so another non-rushing event for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears pulled it out, but really still don't know what to call out of either one of these teams, especially with the Bears not having Urlacher for the first time in many years.
Right. It's kind of the same thing with the Ravens, you know, without having Ray Lewis,
yep.
except the Bears found a way to win, you know.
Yep.
Like I said, you can't really call it any other way. I mean, both teams were pretty well matched up. Looking at the line score and the yards and whatnot, it was just one of them games that could have gone either way. And Chicago just happened to. I think Cincinnati had the lead there going into the fourth, and then Chicago scored a touchdown in the final quarter and made the score 24-21, and the Bears pulled it out.
Yeah. We also had the Dolphins beat the Browns. I expect a lot out of this Browns team this year. I really do. A lot of people look at me like I'm crazy. But
I don't. I totally agree with you. I think their defense could be really good, and I mean, Whedon looked decent in the preseason, and so did Trent Richardson. But this game, they kind of fell flat, I thought.
Sure.
Of course, Tannehill looked real good. And Whedon, I mean, hell, he barely completed 50% of his passes. And in today's NFL, you know, high completion percentage is very – very important because, you know, a lot of
right.
the teams now depend on those short pass plays, you know, the,
right.
and yards after carry and whatnot. Now, back in the 50s and 40s, 50s and 60s, you know, when the pass game was just developing, I mean, you can look at a lot of quarterbacks then, Joe Namath and all the other guys, several guys had under 50% completion percentage, but they were considered great. You know, not
mm-hmm.
these days. I mean, you need to have at least 60%, you know, to be considered. That's why Mark Sanchez really gets a bad, you know, that's why a lot of people crap. One of the reasons Mark Sanchez gets crapped on because he doesn't complete a high percentage of passes, and neither does Flacco for the most part. I mean, his is closer to he gets around 60%. I'm not really sure of his totals, but I mean, they don't complete a lot. They don't have that high completion percentage like a Drew Brees or a Matt Ryan or you know, Peyton Manning or whatnot.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. And I think their defense is good. They had really competitive, you know, games last season, even though they took a lot of losses. A lot of them were right
mm-hmm.
down to the wire.
Yeah.
And, Whedon went in there and threw three picks. I mean, you can't expect too much out of that. So,
I expect
them to bounce back, though.
Yeah, I mean, and the funny thing is we were talking earlier about the rushing game kind of being very anemic this week. Miami's top rusher, Daniel Thomas, 8 carries for 14 yards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I still, and this will kind of be a segue into the next game as well, but I can't understand why they got rid of Reggie Bush. I thought he was doing good things for them.
Oh,
there.
Lord, no. I don't know why either. I mean, I figured he'd be a very good – I mean, he can – come out of. He's not the big bruising runner, but I mean he can get yards running the
mm-hmm.
ball, and not to mention his skill as a receiver. I mean, I figured to him to stay there, you know, and help Tannehill develop even more. But I mean, Tannehill did pretty good. I mean, threw it for a high percentage, had almost 300 yards, and Hartline had a good game for him. But you know, like I said, the running game, and they need somebody to step up there and run the game with a running game if you're going to go anywhere. You need to be able to run the ball sometime. I mean, you may not need the best running attack, but you at least need you need somebody to run the ball. I mean, that's all there
sure.
is to it.
Absolutely. And going into the next game, the Lions beat the Vikings. And who would have thought that Reggie Bush would go in there and have a better running game overall than Adrian Peterson?
Yeah, he had like 100, almost 200 yards total offense. He had like 90 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving. And and the thing was, Peterson started off very first touch. He went like 78 yards. And after that, he was just very pedestrian. He ended up with 93 yards and two touchdowns, but he also had one fumble during that. But that was, I think, because he tripped over a lineman or whatever. But anywho, you know, I thought Peterson was going to be like, oh, man, here we going to go. He's going to rush for 230 yards of the day, you know, or whatever.
Sure.
It didn't turn out that way. And the Lions, who always start out real slow, they have the last – I know especially that year, not last year, but the year before last, when they went to the playoffs, they were behind most games, and then they came back. And Matthew Stafford, of course, had another big game throwing the ball. Like he's a hell of a passer. Dude can chunk the ball for a lot of yards, and having Calvin Johnson helps. But you know, Calvin Johnson didn't really have the big game, you know, people expected them to have, but it was Reggie Bush was their leading receiver that game. So, and Reggie Bush had a 77-yard pass touchdown catch. I mean, it was a short pass, and he ran and then turned to a 77-yard score.
Yeah.
And not to mention, of course, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, that's okay. That's the thing. I mean, to say, you know, I think he'd win some pretty big bets if he said, all right, I bet you Reggie Bush is going to have more receiving yards than Megatron and more rushing yards than Adrian Peterson. I think anyone in the world would have took those bets.
Yeah, I would have laughed. I'd be like, you crazy.
Yeah, how much money do you want to lose?
Yeah, I know, exactly. And of course, one of the other big stories of that game was Ndamukong Suh got fined $100,000 for that little cheap low block on the Vikings player. I don't know who the guy he blocked, but apparently hurt his knee. And like I said, Sue, I don't know if Sue got thrown out of the game or not, but he's going to be paying for it. And this is like, you know, this ain't the first time, of course, that he's been in trouble for doing stuff like this.
Yeah, he definitely can't claim to not be a dirty player at this point. I mean, that's kind
exactly.
of his
MO. I mean, I've been trying to give him the benefit of a doubt, you know, but his actions speak louder than words. I mean, he's kicked people in the nuts, stomped on them, you know, all kinds of madness. You know, I mean, I mean, eventually, you know, you gotta say, hey, you know, you're saying I'm not a dirty player. You know, your actions. Today, especially yesterday, especially Sunday, ain't helping matters.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, we were saying about the rushing yards, and it's really, really true. When it comes down to it, Adrian Peterson having 93 yards doesn't look that terrible on paper. But when he goes out for a 78-yard run and puts in 15 yards for the rest of the game, that's not Adrian Peterson.
No, not at all.
That's a good run and a handful besides that. So it's pretty much dead running game besides one breakout.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, in the playoffs last year when the Vikings went in there, they lost their quarterback. So they ended up going with, who was it, Joe Webb, I think?
Yeah, Joe Webb,
Yeah, who I think is now a wide receiver for them.
Yeah.
I think they converted him.
They turned into a wideout.
And it was pretty much on the shoulders of Adrian Peterson. The passing game, whatever they had, was then non-existent. So it's pretty much the same thing. It's the Vikings' identity, and, I mean, their life completely revolves around Adrian Peterson. If he doesn't take that game over, it's all over. So, I mean, the Lions showed that right off.
Yeah, Christian Ponder, they can't expect Christian Ponder to I guess at this point in his career to be the guy to win the game for him. I mean, he had decent numbers, like I said, that team depends on Adrian Peterson putting up numbers. And like I said, it's like you said, you know, the 93 yards on paper looks great, But you got to consider that very first touch of the game, he had a 78-yard run, and like you said, 15 yards the rest of the game, you know, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, that, like I said, it doesn't look good. Not at all.
No. Yeah, I'm sure he's going to bounce back, but if their identity solely lies with just his running game, you're not going to win playoff games that way.
Mm-mm. Not at all, sir.
So, nope. So next up, you got the Colts and the Raiders, which, you know, you expected everybody, Colts right across the board, and it was a fight. It wasn't
easy
win by the Colts. So
just
pretty surprising.
The Raiders hung in there.
I didn't expect a fight at all out of the Raiders, so it was pretty shocking. I think the Colts have a little bit of ways to go so far.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, but Terrell Pryor, he had a decent game. I mean, he threw two picks, but, you know, he threw the ball decent. And I think he broke the Raiders' record for rush yards by a quarterback. He rushed, 112 yards that game. Yeah, so he did pretty good. And, considering that, I think wasn't that his first start?
I think so,
yeah. Yeah, well, that's not bad, you know, considering. I mean, I didn't really expect a lot out of them. But like I said, they hung in there, and Luck got a – he had a fourth-quarter comeback, and I think it was his eighth fourth-quarter comeback. So, his didn't have real sexy stats, you know, that bumped out at you. But, I mean, they scored on the first two drives and didn't score another touchdown again until when Luck drove him down the field in the fourth, I believe.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a consistent quarterback for them. Not quite Peyton Manning, but who is? And
yeah, exactly.
I think he's a pretty good follow-up for him.
Yeah, I totally agree. And he can actually run pretty good with the ball. I mean, he had 36 yards. He had, I think, like a 19-yard touchdown run yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he can run the ball, too. He can run the ball pretty good, too.
Yeah, I'd say if you more or less say, Peyton Manning is a Joe Montana, you'd go with this guy's a Steve Young.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like a good
that's a pretty good comparison, but only time will tell. Steve Young won him some MVP awards and won Super Bowl. So, but when you compare guys who follow up and stuff, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Next up, you had your guys going up against the Saints, and
my two legit to quit Falcons. Oh Lord.
Yeah. So, what was your only thoughts on the game?
Well, I thought Atlanta started out pretty good. You know, I knew it was going to be a shootout. You know, Rob Ryan's got the Saints defense. You know, running them, and of course they got the Saints got their coach back. You know, so I mean, I think they got a little bit of their swagger back that they didn't have last year. And and of course Drew Brees and. You know, but Matt Ryan had a pretty good game. Let's see here. Hold on, man. I'm kind of wrestling with my son. He's wanting me. He's falling, make me fall around everywhere. But Matt Ryan had a pretty decent game. But you know, a couple of turnovers hurt him. Failure to score in the red zone. They had opportunities. I know Steven Jackson. He had a big run there to get a. Atlanta at the 5-yard line, they could not score a touchdown. They had to kick field goal. They had to kick a field goal, you know, stuff like that. I mean, and Julio didn't have a good game. I think, like I said, they kind of depend on Julio catching. You know, they like to screen Julio out on screen plays, and then throw it to Julio and then have Julio run. Get a bunch of yards after catch, kind of like what he did at Alabama, which he did very well at. But this game, you know, every time you did it, man, damn, I guess the Saints were inspired, you know, it being a rivalry game and all that. Every time he threw a little screen, little bubble screen or screen out to Julio, you know, they were on him they're on him like stink on shit. I mean, that's just what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the defense, Falcons defense, I mean, I've said it through the whole preseason. They were 0-4. They just don't look – I don't think they're ready yet, but – Asante Samuel was out, but their rookie corners, Trufant and God, I forget the other guy's name. I kicked myself. Alford.
Mm-hmm.
They started, and Alford got an interception. Actually, kind of strip intercepting the ball from Marcus Colston. And I mean, like I said,
yeah,
there were some good things to take from it, but there are also some things that Atlanta's really got to work on. They didn't really get Gonzalez involved in the game at all, and it was just like I said, it just like I said, the Falcons just like I said, the Falcons. All in all, the Falcons got stuff to work on.
Sure. Yep. Yeah, and New Orleans, I think you're absolutely right. They're super inspired by having their coach back, and
right.
I think that took a lot of wind out of their sails not having him there. So, Drew Brees is also, you know, that quarterback that can definitely put up yards at any given time. So
yeah, he makes me sick because you think you got him sacked, and he throws it and makes a completion. I think the Falcons got great weapons. They got Harry Douglas as a slot receiver, Roddy White and Julio at the wideouts. You got Tony freaking Gonzalez. You got Steven Jackson who can run the ball and catch balls on the backfield. Jaquiz Rogers is their Darren Sproles. I think the Falcons just kind of dink and dunk too much. I think they need to get the game more wide open. You know, maybe have Julio go down the field a little more to catch some passes. I mean, it just looked like Matt Ryan was just dinking and dunking down the field a little too much. I mean, he didn't take a lot of – I thought took a lot of big shots downfield, you know, to try to make a big play. Like I said, the only big play I saw was from Steven Jackson, you know, when he ran 50 yards. I mean, he only had 11 carries for 77 yards. I mean, they didn't even try to run the ball, it seemed.
Right.
And they got to run the ball. Yeah. I mean, goodness gracious.
Sure. Yeah, like I said, a lot of that across the board with the running. Even, you know, a back to show some success and bust out a run, it's not like they go back to him.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like I said, when Steven Jackson ran that 50-yard had that 50-yarder, you know, they just started throwing the ball in the end zone. I'm like, well, give them another chance. They didn't really give them another chance to run it. They just kept throwing it, and, you know, and they just – like I said, I don't know. I'm not – like I said, I ain't paid the big bucks, and disclaimer, I'm no expert, and, you know, I'm just a football fan, and I'm just calling it like I see it. So, like I said, I ain't get paid. I ain't a professional. I just call – it's kind of, I guess, armchair quarterbacking it.
Yeah, well, that's what we're all doing.
Yeah.
So next game you had the Buccaneers and the Jets. The Bucs lost this one in the end with a penalty, but I think they got a lot of work to do as far as their chemistry. They went and got Darrelle Revis. They got Deshaun Goldson from our guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, their defense looks scary. I mean, they really have a lot of pieces there.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like you're going to a lot of stuff done against their defense. But
I just
don't think they found that chemistry yet to click up.
Right.
I guess we're going to have to see. But, you know, mistake down the end of the game, you know, roughing the passer, you know, unnecessary roughness, you know, out of bounds hitting the quarterback, pretty much gave the Jets the win on a field goal at very, very end of the game. So that was kind of, you know, a win that they let get away from them on a stupid penalty. But,
right.
You know, Smith, you know, came out debuting 256 yards, ran for almost 50 yards. I mean, he did okay for himself, but Jets really didn't deserve to win that game either.
No, not at all. I thought the Buccaneers were going to win, but like I said, I didn't. I saw the highlights of it, and I saw, like I said, the end of it with that penalty. But the Bucs should have won, but it didn't work. That didn't work out that way. And like you said, their defense looks really, really good, especially their defensive backs. You know, they got with Revis coming back, I'm sure he's not fully 100%, you know, just yet. You know, and get his game legs under him. You know, and you know, Golson, you know, that they got that from San Fran, and Mark Barron, a draft pick they got from Alabama a couple of drafts ago. You know, they get that backfield, going, man, they're going to be pretty scary. I mean, they looked – the defense, like I said, from what I saw, looked really good.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And Doug Martin, I mean, he's going to be a good back, and he had a great rookie season. But, you know, again, the running across the board really didn't click. I mean, this might have just been that type of week that these teams weren't looking to establish their run as much, whatever the case was. But you didn't have that dynamite start game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and of course, you know, that's of course Doug Martin. You know, he, like you said, had a great rookie season last year. And and the thing is, when you're a rookie and you go out there and have a season like you did, you know, they're going to expect you to at least match it or surpass it. So he's got a his place is going to be full this season. You know, carrying the load as the tailback for them this season. And Josh Brenner's got to step his game up too.
Yep. Just what I was about to say. There's a lot of question marks around him, and they gave a lot of reps to backups in, you know, preseason, and you know it seems like they're pretty much ready. I think he has this year and more or less contract time. So big decision.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So then you got the Titans and the Steelers. Personally, I really don't feel good about the Steelers. I think that we're probably a year or two before we see Big Ben exit. I really wouldn't be surprised to see him get a couple of, you know, big hits on him and have him start, you know, slowing down. They also lost Pouncey, too, the starting center.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he's going to – he was carted off. I don't know how long he's going to be out for, but that can only speed up the process there with Ben. I mean, they threw for under 200 yards, rushed for 19 yards. I mean, this is not a Steeler team that. Lord no.
And hell, Jake. And on the Tennessee side, Jake Locker. His the thing I've seen him. I mean, like I said, I never really was all that impressed with him coming out of college. I mean, but I mean, he does things well. But I didn't, like I said, and. But I know when the draft was coming, when he was drafted, you know, I know I read somewhere that Tennessee really, really liked him, and then they took him, I believe, sixth in the draft, you know, and people were like, Jake Locker, you know. But and at one time he was considered the number one quarterback in his class. But, you know, but last 2 years, I believe, he's backed up Matt Hasselbeck, and this is his year to prove himself that, hey, I deserve to be the starting quarterback and the quarterback of the future for the Titans. And he didn't really have that great of a game. He was 11 to 20 for 125 yards, no touchdowns. Like I said, 50% completion percentage, not that impressive. And that's Locker's big problem, is that he doesn't complete a lot of passes. He's a 50% completion passer. And as I said earlier in your show, that you've got to at least complete at least 60% or more of your passes if you're to be a good quarterback in this league, and he's not doing it. And Chris Johnson, and, I mean, under 3 yards per carry in this game. You don't know what kind of game you're going to get out of Chris Johnson these days. Ever since he had a 2,000-yard season and sat out and demanded a big contract, and ever since he got that big contract, you know, he just hadn't had them years like he had before, you know, since he got that contract. I mean, yes, he gets 1,000 yards rushing and whatnot, but you know, it's just some games he'll get 25 yards and then he'll bust out for 175 yards the next game, and then you're like, oh yeah, and then like I said, he'll go back to 50 yards and 60 and 30, and then he'll bust out another one for 200 yards. I mean, you just don't know what kind of you don't know what kind of game you're going to get at Chris Johnson. I just think he's not a very very consistent in his performances.
Right.
You know, and coming from a fantasy standpoint, I think he's like the worst. He's every fantasy football player's nightmare, because you know on some people that pick him, you know he gets those, like I said, those 30, 40, 50-yard games, and then they bench him, and as soon as they bench him, he busts out a 160-yard, 3-touchdown game. They're like, oh, damn it, you know, and whatnot.
Yeah.
He's just not very consistent, and that's just something the Titans need to work on, you know, getting the running game and getting Locker to be more accurate passer, and get Kenny Britt involved more if Kenny Britt can stay out of trouble, and get the ball going on the offensive side.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm not a fan of Chris Johnson. I think he runs his mouth better than he runs the ball. ever since he got that contract, he starts, you know, they had the Olympics going. He's like, oh, I'm faster than Usain Bolt. If they set us up, I'll blow him out of the water. And then they're
Well, he had that big.
Next year, I'll beat AP's record. It's like, can you just work on being consistent instead of?
Exactly. I mean, he sat there. He runs. I mean, he had that combine when he had that combine coming out of East Carolina. You know, he was had the fastest 40 time ever, or one of the fastest ever, especially for a running back. You don't see running backs run that fast. You know, so they're like, oh crap. You know, and he comes out and, you know, has a great rookie year, and then has that 2,000 yard year, and ever since he's just been. I mean, he's been a decent back, but not for how much they've been paying him. And I got a feeling if Johnson doesn't have the year, he rushes at least 1,300 yards this year, I think they're going to cut him. I think they will. I got a feeling about it. Don't quote me on that, but I got a feeling he won't be there any longer if he ain't producing the money that Bud Adams paid him.
Yeah, I'm sure. So anyway, next game we got the Seahawks and Panthers, and Seahawks pulled out that win, but I couldn't be happier to see them not be quite as strong as they were last season.
I'm sure you are.
Could be a slow start, but you know, if you win 12-7 against the Panthers, that's something I like to see. I don't expect much out of the Panthers. The majority of their team just lies on Cam Newton's shoulders, and he's only worth what he's worth, depending on the week. Seahawks held to 12 points by the Panthers' defense is a good thing for me.
And who do the Seahawks play next week?
They played it. It's pretty convenient.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, even though the Seahawks didn't score, they only scored, 12 points against them. I mean, Russell Wilson, statistically-wise, I mean, didn't throw a bunch of touchdowns, but he was 25 of 33 for 320 yards. The running game, Marshawn Lynch, you know, 2.5 yards of carry, no touchdowns, you know, I mean – Russell Wilson didn't hit one of his big time receivers for a touchdown pass or anything like that, but he did throw one. It's just like I said, it was just very wasn't the most exciting game, I guess. Not high scoring by any means, but Russell Wilson's got a big test ahead of him next week.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after what I saw Sunday.
Sure. Next up, we got the Chiefs and the Jaguars. Chiefs are another team I'm really impressed with. They look good in preseason. We played them, and you know, I know there's a lot of backups in and everything else, but that defense was getting at our quarterbacks, no matter who we put back there. They were getting back there, so I knew their defense was going to have a good rush. I got a lot of faith in Alex Smith. I was really having a hard time with, you know, the initial decision because I knew nothing about Colin Kaepernick. I'm not a big college fan, so I really didn't know what they were doing. And he was actually ranked number one quarterback in the league when he got hurt. And, you know, he had that. I think the previous game from him getting hurt, he was like 18 for 19 or something ridiculous.
I remember that. He was 18 for 19. He was completing 70% of his passes, and he got hurt. You know, it's kind of like the same story with about 10, 11 years ago when Drew Bledsoe got hurt for the Patriots, and an unknown sixth-rounder from Michigan, Tom Brady, came in and took the job, and he's had it ever since, you know. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it's like Bruce Hornsby says, it's just the way it is sometimes. And Kaepernick came in and did well and thought that he could do more. But, you know, we're talking about the Chiefs here, so we'll talk about another later on. But, like I said, the Chiefs defense, like I said, looked great. But they basically pitched the shutout. If it weren't for that safety touch by the Jaguars, you know, it would have that it had been 28-0, and the defense looked great, but we're talking about the Jaguars here. You know, nothing's really expected a lot from them, but the Chiefs defense did look good. Fantasy wise, I think they scored a perfect 50, so I think you only get 50 points, I believe. I'm kind of new to it, but they got a perfect 50 points, and they look really good. And so I'm expecting good things from with Andy Reid, you know, and Alex Smith passing very well on the pat. You know, he performed very well, and they've got some pretty good offensive weapons there with Jamal Charles and Dwayne Bowe and Dexter McCluster. I think he can be a Darren Sproles kind of like player for them. And he was great at Ole Miss. I'm not excited. I know you don't watch the college game, but you know I do. Right. Roll Tide. I had to put that in there real quick. But he was great at Ole Miss. You know, running and catching the ball. So I mean, I think I think McCluster can kind of be. I mean, I think they listen more at wide receiver these days, but He can be kind of like a Bryant. I mean, well, Jamal Charles can be like a Bryant Westbrook to Andy Reid, and so can McCluster, especially coming out of that, maybe out of a black backfield or a slot position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't think Andy Reid's used to a quarterback that's going to make as least mistakes as Alex Smith's going to make, so it should be a pretty comfortable situation.
It could be.
I'm kind of looking for them to make some waves, but you don't want to know, like you said, it's only the Jaguars, but very, very good start. Got the Cardinals and the Rams. I don't know really what to call out of either one of these teams. And, having a shootout with each other isn't really a good way to show their identity. Mm-hmm. So, I really don't know. I mean, you get just about 300 yards out of Bradford and well over 300 yards out of Palmer. But one's playing the Cardinals and one's playing the Rams, so I don't know. That speaks to it.
Yeah, you're right. The Rams, you know, they've got, Jeff Fisher, he always has pretty solid defensive teams and never really known for having high powered offensive teams. I mean, even though during his time with Titans, he had Steve McNair there for a lot of years, you know, but you know he didn't have games that like blew you out of the water with amazing offense. You know, he liked to run the ball, control, and with Eddie George and all them back in his years with the Titans and McNair, you know, being Steve McNair, and this is his second year with Sam Bradford, and Bradford did all right, two touchdowns, one interception, almost right at. Yeah, right at 299 yards, and like I say, he's number one pick. He's the last number one pick to he's the second to last number one pick to get the big money contract. So he needs to start playing up to it, and hopefully have an injury free season. These were battles of two former number one picks. Mark, wasn't it? Yeah, because Carlson Palmer was number one, wasn't he? For the so two former number one picks for the. And two former Heisman winners going against each other. So, but it's like I said, you can't really, it's like you said, don't know really what get from it. Like I said, it's the Cardinals and the Rams. So,
Next game up is definitely had all of my focus, and that was the Niners and the Packers. I couldn't have been too much happier with this game. Obviously, you know, kind of kept the same pace as the running wasn't really on point. Gore ran for 44 yards, but Colin Kaepernick going in there and throwing for 412 yards.
Wow.
And Anquan Boldin, offensive player of the week, 208 yards reception. I couldn't be any happier. Our two big wide receivers out in Crabtree and Manningham. And for Boldin to step in and just be that guy week one and Kaepernick to be as on point as he was, I'm all about it.
Yeah. I mean, if you would have told me Colin Kaepernick would have thrown for 400 yards in this game, I would have said you're crazy. I figured he'd have thrown about 250 yards and rush for about 60, you know, something like that. But he didn't really run the ball a whole lot. He won the game with his arm pretty much, and did a very good job at it. You know, it, like I said, I think he threw over about 66-67% completion percentage, and over 10 yards per attempt, and you know, just did really good. And you know, and I know you say you didn't really follow him in college. You know, he played for Nevada in they play that triple option spread offense, you know, and usually when you got a team that a quarterback that runs that kind of offense, you know, you don't really expect him to be that great a passer, but apparently, you know, he's shown an ability somewhere down the line where I've been in at the combines or at a private workouts or whatnot, that hey, the guy can throw the bean. And tonight, I mean, he 400 yards, 3 touchdowns, shoot. Yeah, all props to him. But on the other side, Green Bay, Rodgers wasn't no slouch either. He threw for 333 yards, 3 touchdowns, and you know, his 2 receivers, Jordy Nelson and Cobb, you know, had 100 yard games and a touchdown each. So I mean, it was just a back and forth game. All the while, I mean, there was a little bit of controversy in with that fight. You know, they didn't know whether it should have been a fourth down or a third down. But, I mean, shit happens, and they should have – I mean, the Packers should have held on – held them, I guess, is kept them from scoring, and they didn't. And the 49ers came out with it. It was a very exciting game, and I think the Packers, you know, it's like with Urlacher with the Bears and Ray Lewis with the, you know, the Baltimore. You know, I think they're missing one of their defensive captains from the last few years, and Charles Woodson. You know, he went back to the Raiders after several years with the Packers, and I don't know why, but he decided to go back. But Clay Matthews. You know, I mean, somebody's Clay Matthews, AJ Hawk. Somebody in there needs to step in there and be a leader. And not do dumb stuff like that, get in fights. They need to hold their composure and keep the defense focused. You know, get some leadership in there. You know, because I mean, Aaron Rodgers and the offense can't do it all. But I was really happy to see on the Packers side of things. Like I said, I know you're a Niners man, but it was nice to see Eddie Lacy, you know, come in there and go in there from Alabama, you know, second round pick, get the start and score a touchdown for him. He didn't have the greatest running numbers either, 14 carries for 41 yards, but I expect some good things out of him for Green Bay though.
The thing about Kaepernick too that you know, a lot of people see his running ability, and the first thing they're like, he's just one of those guys. But a lot of people don't, you know, remember or know that the guy was also recruited to play baseball, and he was throwing a 96 mile an hour fastball. I mean, this guy can throw. He's got an arm. Besides that, on the defensive side of the ball, I thought Awesome Wall looked awesome. He looked pretty great, and coming out of the Eagles, he was getting burnt left and right there. They didn't have a defense around him. It was kind of just expecting him to make big plays and turn the game around for him. I don't think he's that guy. But he really fit well with our defense. He definitely didn't hold us back. And Eric Reed, he's just unbelievable. I was upset to see Goldson go, and this guy seamlessly came in as a rookie and filled that spot. I mean, this is definitely my next Niner jersey. I'm super happy to have this guy.
Eric Reed, I think, LSU guy. Yeah, I'll tell you, man, LSU has several years have produced some great defensive backs. And like I said, with Peterson in Arizona and Claiborne in there and with Reed, you know, like I said, they've produced some pretty good defensive backs. And like I said, going back with Cardinals, Tyrann Mathieu, I think he's going to be really good. So Reed's going to be a good player for y'all, even though I hate LSU, but I can't hate the man's talent. I think he's going to fit in really good with that Niners defense.
Yeah. I like him a lot. Oh, and, you know, and about the fight, more or less, I don't know if you watched the game, but it more or less was like a flying clothesline type thing. The guy, you know, Kaepernick was well out of bounds.
Yeah.
wrapped him way high and slammed him. And I personally don't even think it should have been of offsetting penalties, because Joe Staley got in his face to, you know, back him up, and Clay took some swings at him. So I think they should have broke it up from there, and I don't think anything should have offset, because Clay was still fired up going after other guys. You know, the refs made the wrong call. It was supposed to be a loss of down, you know, even though it was offsetting. But according to Harbaugh, they still would have went for it. So you really can't call it one way or another that they wouldn't have scored. So But, exciting game. Sure glad to start out the season 1-0. So,
And number 81, nice to see an 81 there doing really good and not being a pain in the ass.
It
isn't fair.
Very, very,
That's my jersey.
Yeah, it's great. I saw the meme you reposted earlier. Oh, God, great. T.O. crying never gets old.
Yeah.
So then you had a Sunday night game of the Giants and Cowboys. I mean, you had Manning goes in there. He throws 450 yards, but he also throws three picks. The team comes out, six turnovers, and Dallas barely beats them. So Dallas can take that win, but can't be. They can't feel like champions right now. Six turnovers, and you barely beat another team.
Exactly, 450 yards by Eli Manning, four touchdowns, like you said, those interceptions didn't do him a bit of good, especially that last one. Wasn't really his fault. The running back kind of turned around late, and by the time he turned around, the ball was past him, and it went in the hands of a Cowboys defender, and he ran it back for the touchdown to put the game out of reach at the end. Eric said, turnover troubles. That son Tom Coughlin just absolutely eats him alive. He will bench you in a heartbeat. Ask David Wilson. he fumbled twice, and he was supposed to be the guy to run in the ball for the Giants this year. Last year he had problems, I believe, with holding on to the ball. And, you know, like I said, Eli Manning, like I said, he threw the ball. I mean, my goodness, how many times? Daggum, threw it 42 times, you know, and and their rushing attack, you know, the other guy, Scott was their running leader with five carries for 23 yards, and then David Wilson was 7 for 19 with two fumbles. I mean, like I said, just no running game whatsoever. But here's the other thing on the other side, you know. Romo didn't throw as many yards passing, but he threw the ball 49 times for 263 yards. And my thing is, if you're going to throw the ball that many times, you need to have at least 350 yards. I cannot stand to see somebody throw the ball 50 times and have under 300 yards passing. That just gets on my damn nerves. I mean, that little dink and dunk ones, that shit always bothered me. But DeMarco Murray, I think, you know, like I said, he didn't get 20 carries or anything. Oh, he did get 20 carries. He got 20 carries for 66 yards. They ran the ball. He may not have got 100 yards rushing, but he got 20 carries and ran the ball, you know. I thought Murray did pretty well, you know. And so, like I said, running the ball helps. And that's something the Giants couldn't do, you know. They were just going down the field, scoring, you know, and – getting turning the ball over, you know, and the Cowboys are going there, run the ball, pass it, you know, and I think their time of possession was like double that of the Giants.
You know,
Yeah, so, I mean, they just, you know, I watched that game, you know, and like I said, it was a nail-biter to the very end until, like I said, Manning threw that last interception, and wasn't really his fault. That, like I said, the running back, I don't know who it was, turned around late, and it kind of soared over him, or it bumped his hand or something, and it went right into the arms of the defensive back, and they ran it back. So, like I said, and this was the first time the Cowboys have beaten the Giants in their own stadium. So I'm sure they're happy about that, especially Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones.
You know, minus those turnovers or just half of those turnovers, you're probably looking at a blowout by the Giants.
Possibly. because the way Manning was throwing the ball, and you know, he, like I said, if you take away those turnovers, you know, and maybe they had got a little more in the, out of the running game, just a little bit. I mean, you know, they would have won that game straight up, I believe. But time will tell, you know. So see if they can't get it together. Speaking on the Giants side, that with David Wilson with those fumbles, he got on his. He got on his Twitter and was ripping everybody for his performance the other night. I mean, I haven't read any of them, but he's got on the internet and talking smack. So I mean, hey buddy, you know you're getting paid a whole lot of money to hold on to the football. You know, you can run your mouth all you want, but you know, dadgummit, if you want to be the tailback for the Giants, you need to hold on to the ball and start producing. So like I said, you can bitch all you want on the internet. Anybody can do that, but not many people can do what you're paid to do and run between the tackles and get some yards and score some touchdowns. So he needs to get on that.
Yeah, and that division is really going to just be a complete roll of the dice because there's a lot of questions. Next game up was a Monday night game in Philadelphia and the Redskins, and the Eagles were on fire for the entire first half. RG3 couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. You know, by the second half, he started to kick in. It was just a little too late.
Right.
But, I mean, he really, you know, started to throw the way he, you know, you're used to seeing him throw, at least his rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of the game, you know, four quarters of that would probably have been a whole different situation. But, you know, it's hard to say because the Eagles' defense really didn't hold up. Once he kicked in and started throwing the ball like he was supposed to, the Eagles couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So.
I totally agree. Griffin wasn't running the ball like he usually does. I mean, I don't think he really should. He needs to start just staying back there and throwing the ball. He needs to look at his counterpart in this game, Michael Vick, and see what that's done for him. I mean, Michael Vick, for years, even before the dogfighting charges, you know, he relied more on his legs and his athletic ability to win games. And like I said, it worked sometimes, and sometimes it didn't, you know. And you know, and so he just needs to start becoming more of a, you know, staying in the pocket and being a quarterback, you know. And you know, when if there's nothing open and he sees daylight, run and get down. Don't try to be Superman, even though he wears Superman socks, you know. Don't be Superman, try to gain extra yards. I mean he's not a 230-pound running back, you know. He needs to get down and stay down, because like I said, he got hurt several times, you know, with a knee injury. He got a concussion against the Falcons last year, and he can't do that every year. He's gonna have a short career if he keeps that up. That's for damn sure. So, like I said, Alfred Morris for them last year, who came out of nowhere, and that's Mike Shanahan's thing. He gets running backs in high rounds or not even drafted and turns them into superstars. Terrell Davis, one of them from back in the 90s with the Broncos. Morris didn't really do a whole lot. He had a touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think I'm at a lost line there. Yeah. The drop off? Says you're still on the line on Blog Talk over here, but not hearing you. Let me see. Try to reload the page and see what's going on.
For
definitely
that,
not
know,
hearing any. But there you are.
Oh, I'm sorry. Brian Kelly, Chip Kelly. He was a coach at Oregon, you know, before he became the Eagles coach. And, you know, he was well known for his high impact offense, very fast, very intense ground game. And, you know, and it looked like he's got McCoy looked like it looked like the kind of an Oregon type of kind of like an offense with some of the numbers I saw. I mean, I didn't really catch a lot of that Monday night game, but it looked, like I said, the offense looks promising. But like I said, the defense, you know, a lot of major question marks, as it's been the last few years for Philadelphia.
And the other thing that scares me, and I don't even mean scares me, but if I cared about the Eagles, it more excites me because I hate Michael Vick, but is the statement he made going into this season saying that he's going to become more of a run threat again and he's going to be the elusive quarterback that he once was. I think for a quarterback, especially as banged up as he's been over the years, to announce I'm going to go run the ball, they're going to get your number. I think that's going to hurt.
I think that was stupid of him to do, to even announce that, because they're going to be like, okay, we'll be waiting for you. And Vic ain't as big as Cam Newton. Cam Newton, you know, he's one of those quarterbacks that can run the ball, but he's a big dude. He's 6'5", 230, 240, 250, and Kaepernick's a big guy too, you know. Vic's a little guy. You know,
yeah.
So, I mean, for him to go in there and, you know, getting pummeled by linebackers, you know, or, I mean, safeties that are a little bit bigger than him, I mean, that's fine if you want to – You expect Vic to run the ball, but he needs to, you know, like, you know, stay in the pocket, make some plays. If you can't, if it ain't there, try to make it with his feet, but be smart with it, because like you said, he's been banged up the last few years after he had that one good year with Philadelphia when he came back, you know, and they expected big things, and ever since then, he's either got hurt or, you know, well, yeah, he's just gotten hurt and hasn't lived up to that billing since.
Yeah. And a lot of the analysts and stuff are saying, too, that more or less this coach is using Vic as serviceable as he can be, but he's really, really high on Barkley.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Vic can get himself banged up and try to break some kind of quarterback rushing record, but does he bang himself up enough he's out of the game? He's pretty much getting replaced immediately.
Oh, yeah. He just needs to do what the coach tells him and win the game. Don't worry about what your stat line looks like. I mean, it looks sexy for us for the stat nerds and fantasy football guys. But you know, like I said, as long as you win games, that's all that matters.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I mean, you got those teams: the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Redskins, and the Giants. And who knows who's going to end up on top at the end of the season? So
yeah.
Last game of the week, you had the Texans and Chargers. Another one of those games to me. I thought the Texans were just going to whoop them, and turned out to be a pretty, you know, even keeled game, back and forth. The you know, Texans win 31-28, but you know, 21 points down the Texans were. They had to climb out of that hole in order to beat the Chargers. So that's. I mean, it's a big comeback, but I didn't expect them to be down to the Chargers that early on.
No, man. Yeah, I mean, everybody's expecting the Texans another Super Bowl favorite for some guys, you know. Matt Schaub, a great quarterback, former backup to Michael Vick in Atlanta. I knew when Schaub came out for Virginia, you know, not very well known, but when they drafted him, I had a feeling he'd be a good backup for Vic, and he was very good. And, you know, I hate that he went to the Texans, but, you know, at that time they were giving Vic the high-dollar contract and all that, and Schaub went somewhere where he can shine and show his talents, and he did that today, you know, Monday, with 346 yards and 3 touchdowns, and Andre Johnson was a beast, you know, 146 yards receiving. No touchdowns, though, but Owen Daniels, the tight end, he caught 2 of Schaub's touchdowns. And Rivers, like I said, didn't throw for a lot of yards, but he threw for 4 touchdowns and only 1 interception.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so we're going to have to see what comes out of these Texans, you know, as the weeks go. You know, a lot of week one uncertainty and a lot of different things happen, so I guess, you know, we'll go into week 2. I'm going to, you know, run down the picks. I got the point spreads from the, Yahoo, I think I use, or the CBS. And, you know, I'll run them down and just give our picks. The Jets start off on Thursday up against New England. In New England, they got New England favored by 12.5 points. My personal pick, I go with New England hitting the Jets hard. A lot of times New England will falter, but they'll usually bounce back and really lay on a team. So that's what I kind of see happening here.
I see that too. I see, with the uncertainty and kind of anemic play of the Jets, I see New England taking this one too.
Mm-hmm. Then you got San Diego and Philadelphia. Philadelphia at home. They got Philly favored by 7.5. What do you think?
Well, you know, the offense, like I said, I like the Eagles' offense, but I think I'm gonna go with Philly on this one, because with San Diego, Ryan Matthews running the ball hasn't really impressed me, and Phillip Rivers, like I said, this might be his last year in San Diego, and he's going to really have to prove himself this year, and I just think he's had declining years, and I just think he's going to continue to have probably another mediocre season, and I pretty much see Philadelphia winning this one.
All right. I'm going to go with San Diego on it, just because I think if they were able to hang in there with Houston's defense coming at them, I think they're going to have a little less challenge as far as Philadelphia's defense. I mean, they're going to have to deal with Philadelphia's offense. But again, I mean, they had Arian Foster on the other side of the ball, and they were able to hang in with them. So, it's one of those hard picks, because I'm always leaning against Philly, but going to lean against Philly again in this one and go San Diego.
All right.
Carolina's up next against Buffalo. Carolina's favored by 3.5. I'm going to go with Buffalo on this one. It's the home game. Really don't know many other reasons why exactly I'm going with them, because it's kind of a toss-up between these teams.
Yeah, it's a toss-up between these teams, but I agree. Carolina's got on the offensive side is Cam Newton throwing the ball to their receiver's name that always gets in fights. I forget his name. Steve Smith, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's got him. Their running game's suspect. I mean, they've got guys hurt, and the guy they got there right now, I can't remember his name at the moment, but he's kind of underperformed since they gave him that contract and all that. I think the Bills are an up-and-coming team, and E.J. Manuel really shows some gusto, and I think with the 1-2 punch with C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson are running the ball, and Stevie Johnson out there catching passes from E.J. And C.J. catching passes, I think Buffalo will win this one by 5.
All right. Next up, you got St. Louis at your Atlanta Falcons. What do you got? Oh, the Falcons favored by 6.5.
Well, I'm going to pick the Falcons.
Shocker.
I'm a homer. I'm a homer. Want to pick the Falcons? I think they're going to get some things fixed a little on defense. Hopefully, Asante Samuel will be back. The play, and with those corners, that really shows some promise against Drew Brees, quarterback. The Saints team last week go up against Sam Bradford. They pretty much held the running game in check, as a lot of teams did this week. But I'm hoping that they'll fix some things on that, and fix some things on offense. Maybe get the passing game a little more wide open and running the daggum ball. Because I mean, Steven Jackson looked great. But they only gave him 11 carries, and I expect the Falcons will win this by at least 10.
Yeah, I got to agree. Atlanta's going to put up a big game here. They just went out against the Saints, and the Saints had a lot to prove. You know, the coach back, Drew Brees, Bradford's no slouch, but I don't think he's Drew Brees. So I think Atlanta's going to be able to handle St. Louis by a touchdown easy.
Yeah.
Next up, you got Washington at Green Bay. They got Green Bay up by 7.5 points. Going out on a limb and going with Washington here, just because I tend to think that RG3 is going to stay on that role that he found in the second half and actually play his first full good game up against Green Bay. Green Bay can be tough. I don't think their running game is that scary. Pretty much relies on Aaron Rodgers being Aaron Rodgers. So, is very, very possible for them to make that happen. But, again, you know, we were saying a lot of different parts of their defense doesn't really have an identity. I mean, that's what they're going to be throwing the ball up against. So that's just my go there.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the Packers on this one. I think it's going to be a close game. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to torch them. And I think that the way LeSean McCoy was able to run the ball on them, I think they'll actually be able to run the ball a little bit better on them than they were against the 49ers. And I think it might end up being a – I think they might end up being put – I think it might end up being like a 60 points at least being put up in this game. I'm going to go with the Packers.
All right. Next up, you got Cleveland at Baltimore. Baltimore favored by 6.5 points. Who do you got?
It's going to be in Baltimore. I think Baltimore is going to want to recover from that 7-touchdown thrashing Peyton Manning gave him on the defense. And as much as I would like to see the Browns do well, I think the Ravens are going to win this one by 3. Whedon, you know, I think they're going to try and get after Whedon and stopping Trent Richardson, and I hope Trent Richardson has a good game, but I think the Ravens are going to be inspired because like I said, they were destroyed by Manning, and the Ravens are going to come back, and I think they're going to beat them by at least 6.
Okay,
it'll be close to the end, I believe.
So with the spread, who do you got? Because Baltimore's favorite 6.5.
I got Baltimore.
Okay. Yeah, I got Baltimore, too. I think they are going to bounce back. As you said, I definitely want to see Cleveland do well. I don't know if Baltimore is going to be the team that they show up against. Mm-hmm. I think they'll give them a fight. I don't know that they're going to be making a statement against Baltimore just yet, though. Like you said, the Peyton Manning game is – they're going to have some anger coming into this game and something to prove at home. They should have opened at home, and this will be their homecoming. They'll be awarded rings, I believe. So they're going to have a little bit of energy behind them.
Yeah. I'm sure Ray Lewis will be there to inspire them a little bit. So tell them to get their ass in gear and do what they got to do on defense.
Yeah. Then you got Miami at Indianapolis, and Indy's favored by 3.5 points at home.
I'm gonna go with the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins, you know, had a pretty good game Sunday, and I think Tannehill's going to continue to improve. And he's got they got him a couple of weapons to throw to. However, they've got to get the running game going, and with Andrew Luck, you never know. He can. You can't count him out in any game, but I'm gonna call the Dolphins and winning an upset at the last minute.
All right, yeah, very very possible. Still yet to see, you know, what they could fully do if Wallace is that guy. I mean, they paid him a whole bunch of money, you know. So Tannehill's definitely got an upswing, and I think he's got a lot of positives. I think Andrew Luck's gonna pull this one out at home. But it should be a closer game. Week one, I really don't know what to take at face value and well, we're just talking about an opening game. So I'm going to go with Indy this one, but I wouldn't be surprised if you're right.
Yeah.
Next up, you got Tennessee at Houston. Houston's favored by 8.5, and I think they'll win by at least that. Another one of these things, they had too much of a shootout week one with a team I didn't expect them to. I don't think Tennessee is going to be able to hang with Houston. Should be big points put up here. I expect Foster to have his first big running game of the season, and I think they win by 2 touchdowns here.
I'm going to go with the Texans too, J-Cat. I just don't think the Titans got enough firepower to match up with the Texans. And like I said, Jake Locker and his inconsistency at quarterback, you know, not being very accurate, and Chris Johnson, you don't know what you're going to get from him game to game. But with Arian Foster, the people, he's going to I think he's going to have a pretty – he's going to have a really good game. And with Shaw throwing to Andre Johnson. And look out for rookie wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins, I think, to come out and have a good game for the Texans and win by 10.
Okay. Next up, you got Minnesota at Chicago. Chicago's favored by 6.5 at home. What do you got?
I'm going to go with Minnesota. I think, like I said, like we both said earlier, Peterson had 93 yards rushing, but all that came off the first play of the game on a 78-yard TD run. I think they're going to fix that with an Urlacher less Bears. I think Peterson's going to have a really good game. I think Peterson's going to run at least 130 yards. Ponder's going to throw maybe 210, and Cutler's going to throw a couple of interceptions, and Pout and Forte will probably be taken out of the third quarter with another injury.
Yeah.
Matt Rapp and Forte, that's what I call them.
I agree. Minnesota's going to pull this one out. Adrian Peterson should have a far, far bigger game. Especially, I mean, they go in so heavy with him, and he did so much last year, and didn't play the preseason again. And then this preseason, they kept him out, put him in for just, I think, one snap or two snaps, and just didn't even run the ball. So, you know, they preserved him completely. He's already, you know, challenged himself and put out there that he's breaking the run record. He's, you know, he's doing this, he's doing that. There's no time to be wasted. So he's either going to put up these big, big games or, you know, everything he's going to do is, I'm sure, going to be impressive in the end. But he's not breaking any records unless he starts, you know, breaking out in these games.
Right.
So, I agree with Minnesota. Next up, you got Dallas at Kansas City. Kansas City favored by 2.5. I see Kansas City winning this one. They pitched such a good game in the first game. I think Alex Smith is consistent enough. You're not going to see, you know, six turnovers out of Kansas City. And I think they're going to definitely surprise Dallas. At, you know, Dallas just won a game, but they're not going to look like it in this week.
Yeah. I'm on. You know what? They're going to be playing at Arrowhead, and the crowd there is really wrong. They cause a lot of ruckus over there. With the noise, I'm gonna have to go also with the Chiefs. They look really good against a lowly Jaguars team. Cowboys just barely won that. They're gonna be on the road. I think the Cowboys passing game needs some work. Tony Romo throwing, like I said, 50 times for 250 yards, I think, is just not good. And but like I said, I like the way the Cowboys run the ball, though. So if the Cowboys can run the ball and Tony Romo can keep him, if Tony Romo can actually make some long passes, they could come out and win it. But I just see the Chiefs winning this. Their defense looked great, and I see the Chiefs winning this by 3.
All right. We got Detroit and Arizona. Detroit's favored by 1.5. Who do you got?
Well, by the time I get to Arizona, I'm going to pick the Detroit Lions. I think Stafford's going to continue throwing the ball. I like the way their offense looks. Calvin Johnson, I think, is going to come out there and have a good game, even though he's going to be going up against Patrick Peterson. That's going to be a fun matchup to see. But Reggie Bush out there coming out of the flat, catching balls, running the ball. The defense, I mean, Detroit's defense, I mean, it's pretty decent. I mean, as long as Ndamukong Suh ain't pulling dick moves and hurting people, you know, I think they can be really good. Carson Palmer, I mean, he can find a new life there and be a good quarterback, kind of like it's possible, kind of like Kurt Warner did. I'm not saying he's going to the Super Bowl or anything, but he's got Larry Fitzgerald to throw to, and if he can find him and Mendenhall can find his way to find the way he was running in Pittsburgh, they can be good too. But I just don't see them winning this game against the Lions. I do think though Arizona will come out in front at first, and then Detroit will come back at the end, like they're pretty much been known to do the last couple of years.
Yeah. I also like I like Detroit as well. I really like what they're doing with Reggie Bush. And, I mean, Megatron gets involved to the extent that he's normally involved on top of a good game out of Reggie Bush, you know, some receiving yards out of the backfield, you know, a decent running game. I think they're going to be really hard to handle. So you definitely got to go with them as well.
Yeah.
Next game up, you got New Orleans at Tampa Bay. New Orleans is favored by 3.5 points. And I think if Geno Smith gave such big problems to Tampa Bay and gave them the opportunity to blow the game in the final minute, they're going to have a really hard time with Drew Brees. I think Tampa Bay's defense is going to be a really big deal towards the middle to end of the season, but I think they need to find their chemistry first. And there's a lot more that they have to do. Drew Brees is going to give these guys problems. So I'm going New Orleans.
As much as I hate to say it, I'm going to have to go with the Saints on this one. It's a AFC South game. I mean, NFC South game. Like I said, the Bucs defense can looks scary, but they're very young, and Brees is a veteran, and I mean he's had back-to-back 5,000 yard seasons, which is unheard of. I just see Brees picking them apart, you know, because like I said earlier, Brees, I mean, you think he got Brees sacked, and he'll just throw it at the last second. He'll find somebody open, and he's just so in sync with this offense, and he's got so many weapons, and you know their running game is that. I mean they're not really known for running game, even though they got my boy Mark Ingram on there, Alabama guy, but you know they got a great running back by committee there, and you know with Sproles and Thomas and Ingram, and of course all the guys receiving the ball out there with Graham and Colston and Lance Moore and all them, and like you said, a Rob Ryan-led defense is going to have them inspired because they were, I believe, statistically one of the worst defenses in NFL history last year. So I think they're going to have something to prove, you know, with Sean Payton, you know, saying, you know, we're back, and I think they're going to continue going 2-0, unfortunately, in the NFC South against my Falcons, you know, we'll be behind trying to chase them. It's going to be, I believe, like at the end of the year, it's going to be the Falcons and the Saints, like it's usually been. And and it looks like the Saints are going to be 2-0 in the NFL and 2-0 in their division by the end of week two.
Yeah. Next up, you got Jacksonville at Oakland. Oakland favored by 5.5 points. And who do you got there?
I'm going to go, like I said, I've been going with the spread this whole time, you know, with who they're picking. I'm going to have to go with Oakland. Jacksonville just, I don't know, Jacksonville just doesn't really interest me. Blaine Gabbert hasn't really proved nothing. Did he even play? I didn't even watch that game where they lost.
Let me see.
I don't have him in front of me.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was 16 for 35, 121 yards.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, he's. I think Jaguars wasted a pick on him, drafting him out of college because I think he was a system quarterback at Missouri, you know, because the guy that was before him, which is a backup, I believe, the Saints right now, or he's somewhere else, and I'm not sure, Chase Daniel, he threw up massive numbers there at Missouri under that offense, and, you know, he was a system quarterback, and I think the Jaguars made a real dumb decision drafting him as their QB of the future. I think they should put in Chad OG Henny Loke and have him start, but even with Maurice Jones-Drew, you know, coming back and playing, I just don't see them winning this. And it being in Oakland in the black hole, I think Terrell Pryor is going to build on top of what he did in week one, even though he lost, and have a good game. And hopefully maybe Darren McFadden can have a breakout game, barring he gets hurt like he usually does, and they'll go over, I think, at least by 8.
Right. Yeah, I got to agree. Oakland, I mean, did look good up against Indy, who, I mean, was a playoff team last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a pretty tall order from an Oakland Raiders team. But, I don't know what Jacksonville has to offer. You got MJD, but other than that, I mean, they got the owners, you know, in talks and decide whether they want to sell the team to London. And, you know, I mean, there's been so much
talk. What's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but whatever.
Of course it is. Yeah, I can't imagine the I mean, that's a whole other topic, but I can't imagine, you know, what the off weeks would be like and the travel time alone.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody,
I mean,
would
have
be
all
at a disadvantage.
Yeah, well, they had all their games be Monday night games, I guess, because, I mean, they're 6 hours ahead of us. They'd be playing 9 in the morning, I guess.
Yeah, just brutal. But, the team's in complete disarray. I actually expected Tim Tebow to go back there, you know.
So did I.
When he got pretty much floated out, they didn't bite at all. I don't know what that guy's gonna do, honestly.
I don't think they took Tim Tebow because I think they want to draw the fans away from him so they can sell the team.
Maybe.
So I'd be like, hey, that's a possibility because, you know, the fans wanted Tebow there, and even though Tebow, you know, hasn't really been that impressive throwing the ball, but, you know, he sells tickets. He's from that area, you know, and they didn't bite on it. And I'm just thinking, you know, they just want to piss the fans off so they can sell the London maybe or whatever the hell they're doing. I have no idea. But I don't know what the Jaguars are thinking or what they're doing or whatnot. I mean, it's like you said, they're all in disarray. And, you know, it's a team with no direction.
Yeah. Then you next game you got Denver and the Giants. You got the Manning showdown. You got Denver favored by 5.5 points. I don't think the Giants team is close to together. You got the Denver Broncos who are, you know, favored to go to the Super Bowl, whether it's week one or week two. But you're going against the Giants coming off of, you know, 6 turnovers. I think Denver's going to give them big problems, and Big Brother's going to, you know, definitely put a punishing on his brother right there.
I got to agree with you on that. I think the Giants are going to play a lot better. I think the turnovers are going to be cut down. But the way Manning played, I don't think it's going to be a 7 touchdown performance. But Peyton Manning is when he's hot, man, he stays hot. Like that year when he threw 49 touchdowns, man, he was throwing 4 or 5 touchdowns a game, you know, there for like forever, you know, throughout the whole season he was. So I think the 7 touchdown showing he had is just going to continue. He's got great weapons, Demaryius Thomas. He's got Wes Walker. He's got some pretty good he's got some decent backs, not great backs, but you know, he's done more with less. So I see the Broncos, and the Broncos got a pretty good defense, even without Von Miller there and losing Elvis Dumervil to the Ravens. I think because John Fox is a very good defensive coach, but I see the Broncos winning this one on Sunday night.
For sure. Then you got the Sunday night game is San Francisco at Seattle. Seattle's favored by 3.5 at home, loud stadium. You know, it was almost impossible for San Francisco to play there last year. I mean, screaming in the huddle and still can't hear each other, and headsets couldn't even hear those. So the stadium is pretty much built for sound from what they're saying. Who do you got in this?
Well, you know, I know who you're going to pick, but just for the sake of argument, I'm going to pick the Seahawks. And just for the sake of argument, Russell Wilson had a great game last night. Monday night, and I think he's going to continue to do well. Even though I think he's going to do pretty good against the a very accomplished 49ers team defense, a defense that allowed 300 plus yards to Aaron Rodgers as well. Marshawn Lynch, I think he's going to eat him a big old bag of Wildberry Skittles, and I think he's going to rush for at least 75 to 100 yards in that game. And it's going to come down to the very last minute where Russell Wilson's going to throw a Hail Mary to Golden Tate, and him and Nnamdi Asamoah are going to jump up the air and come down with the ball. And Nnamdi's going to strip it from them, or both going to have the ball in their hands, and the referee's going to throw a touchdown, just like in the Packers-Seahawks game. It's going to happen again, brother.
I'm like being specific. All right. Down to the pass. All right. Well, obviously I'm going with my guys. I just don't think I can go another way,
No.
Especially when they look this good, even trying to be any type of realist. I still got to go with my guys. Seattle, you know, 12-7 over the Panthers. Cam Newton and the Panthers, I think, really, really should put up big question marks. And, you know, Wilson having a good game or not, I think we have a lot more for them to deal with than Cam Newton. So, you know, I just,
you know what,
I'm going into week two feeling good.
Alrighty.
Definitely feeling good.
And you have every right to feel that way.
And I think, you know, they're going to go in and they're going to try to key Anquan Boldin, which I don't think is going to stop him. I think it's going to take him out of the 200-yard range. But I think we're going to see our first receptions out of Quentin Patton this game. And he's a fast rookie. He could do some work. He looked great in the preseason. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him as an option this week.
Yeah, like I said, I think that's going to be a really good game on Sunday night. It can go either way, but it's like you said. But like I said, the loud, the great acoustics of the stadium in Seattle, and they've got great corners there and decent defense. I think it's going to be a very good matchup game, and I think it can go either way. I don't think Kaepernick's going to throw up 400 yards. If he does, like I said, he'll surprise me again. But you never know. But fear the capper keeper. He might bust it out again like he's done before.
Absolutely. Yep, capper keeper. and you got your Monday night game, Pittsburgh-Cincinnati, big rivalry. Cincinnati's favored by 7.5 at home. I'm going to go with Cincinnati on this one. Like I said, I think Pittsburgh is going to have a real rough season. And Cincinnati had that kind of shootout with the Bears there. You know, they came up on the losing end of that. I think that, you know, they're going to pull this one out.
All right. My gut wants to pick the Bengals, but pretty much for the same. And everything you said was right on the money, but I think the Steelers are going to come back and win in a low scoring close game. I would expect it to be probably 18-12 will probably be the final score in that game. Roethlisberger, he's probably going to he'll throw one touchdown and try and the rest will probably be field goals.
Yeah, I can definitely see that happening. Definitely looking forward to this week of football for sure. Just so hyped that football is finally back.
Me too. With all them games said, there is one game that I am looking forward to. It's in the college ranks. That's my Alabama Crimson Tide against the Texas A&M Aggies. I think it's going to be a real close game. I think it's going to be a close game there for a while, but maybe the first half, and then Saban's going to scream at the Tide, and then they're going to come out there and pull the win off and win by at least 10 points. I'll be at Helen, Georgia Oktoberfest, so I'll probably won't be able to watch a lot of this game because I'll be with my family doing the chicken dance.
Nice. Sounds good. I covered all the games and everything like that. So thanks for coming on, man. Definitely have you back. Talk some football anytime you want to come back, man.
Oh, thanks, J-Cat. This is really my first time being on a show where I wasn't talking about wrestling or anything. You know, one of the other things I really like to talk about is sports. I can talk about baseball, basketball, but I really like to talk about football. And I appreciate the opportunity for you giving me a chance to do this. I've never done it before. And hopefully I did a pretty good job, and I was a little informative. I actually wrote down game notes.
Nice. Yeah, great time, man. Definitely welcome back anytime you want to come on and talk about football. Just let me know.
Right on, man. I guess I'll let you get back on the rest of your show. And like I said, thanks for having me on. And you're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, brother. Yeah, this is Insane Lane. You better listen to it. I'm going to come up there and stab your head in with a fork. Yeah.
All right, man. You have a good night.
Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
You too. There you go. There was Insane Lane talking some football. So there you go. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to take a break, come back, and I'm going to talk about a little bit about that CZW show they did over the weekend, talk a little bit about the one that's coming up this weekend. So let me see. I know I got a track. All right, check it out.
When they say my time is up and I am just collecting dust, don't turn on me, don't turn on me. And when they claim that I'm washed up or when my gums begin to rust, I'm warning you, don't turn on me.
December 997, I thought, say I'm going blow. Feeling's not an option, my son turning 1 year old. I wrote a verse about the night I just spent in Central Booker, cause my grandpa coffee pot had cocaine cooking. Fast forward my grind, 9899. More apes, more O's, broken than nickels and dimes. I told niggas I make it, they was doubting me then. Picture me zoning on a park bench, pushing my pit. Who needs enemies? My friends keep shooting my friends. They're taking hits now, they blow your brains out for a fence. Call me a dreamer, cause I can see myself on top. World of Sabrina, I'm getting my ass off this block. Ain't it funny how the niggas I came up with wasn't bumping me? Prodigal to slum, I guess it's misery love company. Told them I'm a winner, I'd be something to believe in. They was more concerned with who was rolling up the weed in. JMJ didn't work, neither did Columbia. Got shot, got dropped, one hell of a summer, huh? 1 year recovery felt like a bag of broken bones. Bill collectors coming round, that's when you know you on your own. Strap the vest, talk the throne, they count me out, I'ma show 'em. I fought my way out of motherfucking corners before. I'm better under pressure, I'm built for it. I've been on the go, go my life, I'm still here for it.
When they say my time is up and I am just collecting
dust, don't you ever bet against me. Him and Drake gave me a shot and I ran with it. Homie in the cell saying, damn, my man did it. Get rich or die trying, made it to the top. I'm fighting off my competition, trying not to drop. It seems like no one seen them fucking with the key. All they see is me trying to take off their fucking head. They don't see the slap, all they hear is the shot. Soon as somebody hit, I'm sure they'll run to the top. How am I the bully of the East if I don't start no beef? I meet aggression with aggression, I learned that on the street. I see them fronting on their blogs, saying I'm done like I ain't got that flow. They know, be number one, you number one.
Yeah, there you go. Alright, so I guess I'm going to get into CZW.
the law once again. Forever war. CCW. I'm for not. Dead. Out of here. All spotless. Been dead. Tonight. Andy Reader. Rich Swan. Been dead. Ray Blood. Grilling out. Freaking Jack. I'm sad. Going down.
Yeah, so this was Deja Vu. Well, let me start out by saying this. Not every classic CZW show needs to be a yearly fucking event. I cannot stress this enough, that it's just retarded. We don't need to do that shit. I'll probably end talking about this show the same way I'm going to start talking about this show. You cannot outdo the first Deja Vu. You can't do it. Following that shit is like putting the fucking headline act as the opener. And then next thing you know, you're just going to send bands out there and try to just blow their set off the stage, and no one's going to be blown away. No one's going to be blown away by what you put up yearly, call it Deja Vu, and it's just not. It's just not. I mean, some of these Deja Vus might have been serviceable, might have been good, might have been decent, might have been whatever you want to call it. The one and only Deja Vu I actually vividly remember is the initial Deja Vu, Zandig versus Lobo. That's it. That's it, straight up. And it's not for any other reason, but that was the one that was the memorable one. That was how it done. That was ultra violence at its best, or however you want to call it. Okay, so that, I'll just start with that. Okay, opening match was David Starr and Greg Excellent. Pretty entertaining match. Pretty good comedy, and I think David Starr is a pretty good wrestler and everything like that. I really don't need to see them overdo this whole look at it thing. I mean, I know you got to have some kind of gimmick or something to go off with, but I'm already getting a little annoyed by it. And they're really, really trying to run with it. And it just, you know, they did a whole big, you know, comedy spot with Greg and him shaking his shit and fucking, and the refs pulling his fucking pants down, and then they double bump off of it. You know, I mean, good, you know, comedy worked that way, like I said. And when it came down to it, not a bad match. Really didn't have a problem with this match at all. You know, Greg's great. And like I said, David Starr, I think, is a very good up-and-coming wrestler. Next up was Biff Busick and Dave Crist. Great shit. I enjoyed this match. I continually am very, very impressed with Biff Busick. I kind of can't get enough of this guy. I mean, his matches out there just look really good. He's got some really cool-looking suplexes. His offense, his striking shit looks really good. And that's what I like. I don't like this fucking, fill-in-the-blanks just, okay, well, that was a chop. Okay, that was a forearm strike. Okay, that was it. I like to see high-impact moves. I like to see hard-hitting strikes. You know, and I know a lot of people get all bent out of shape. You know, high-spot wrestling, it's not all about that. It might not be, but that's what fucking excites me and a lot of other fans. That's what pops people. And I'll get back to that a little later, I'm sure. But, the thing about it is, I'm not a wrestler and, never have been a wrestler. I did train for that, 6 months or whatever. And amongst that time, only had two actual training sessions that I was trained by someone, in my opinion, obviously this guy is a legend, but I don't think anybody else I was trained by, had talent. And that guy was Manny Fernandez. Again, I don't think any of the training that I had qualified as me being a professional wrestler. I would never claim to be that. I'd never claim to be fully trained or even half trained or a quarter trained or anything.
And I just want to put that out there, like, straight up. I never claim to be, like, trained or, yeah, I'm a wrestler. Or I used to wrestle. Like, I wouldn't even go there with that shit. So, but the point I'm going with is the one thing I took out of that, like, if I were to be a wrestler, one thing I would never forget and just never forgot, even as a, you know, as a, from a fan standpoint, is Manny told me straight up, he said, if you're going to hit, make it count. You know, if you're going to strike, make it count. If you're going to bump, make it count. Like, don't just bump to bump. You fucking bump. If you bump, you fucking bump. You know, and, you know, if you're going to, you know, throw some kind of strike or you're going to do something, you better make that shit look like death. You know, like, it, don't just do something to do it. Everything you do should have some kind of impact or have some kind of intensity or you know, meaning instead of just like, okay, we're going to throw three chops here. They're not going to really, you know what I mean? So like that just kind of made sense to me. And a lot of it, you know, not really just because he said that, but because again, that's what I like to see. I like to see two guys in the ring kicking the shit out of each other. Like you see Low-Key Kenta just fucking destroying each other. Joe Kobashi just destroying each other in a ring. Well, that wasn't because they mailed in a couple chops before the next fucking, you know, segment that they were doing. It's because you've seen them hitting each other and you immediately perk up like, oh, fuck, it's oh, shit. You know what I mean? Like, and it starts with those chops or those forearm strikes or whatever it is. You don't have to be dropping someone on their head every other second, but when these strikes are being laid down, you should have some kind of, you know, belief that these guys are really trying to fuck each other up, you know. I mean, and again, it's just my opinion as a fan, and it's what I enjoy to watch. So, this, you know, like I was saying, back to, you know, this match. Biff Usyk, you know, he's got some hard-hitting stuff. I like the way he works. Dave Chris, you know, great wrestler. I like the way he works. There was like a dive miss by Biff, you know, towards the end that looked fucking crazy. You know, he missed the dive, went through the ropes. I mean, that shit looked like it skipped the frame. Like, you know, like if you get like a glitch or something, he went through the ropes with fucking crazy speed. And, yeah, some guys, you know, they're going to miss that dive. You see them slow down before they hit the ropes because obviously they're not trying to die on the other side of those ropes. They're, you know, it's them and the floor. And, I mean, he went through with intensity where you just went, oh, shit, all right. And he hit a sick-looking German on the apron, too. And, you know, there was something that happened with the, what was it, the BJ Whitmer thing. There was a lot of people saying different things. They should ban the pile driver. They should ban this. They should ban that. Someone was saying they should ban moves on the apron altogether because it's, you know, it's hard ground out. It's harder there, and it's nothing ever good came out of it, and this and that. It's like, well, I think a lot of good has come out of it. I think a lot of moves look devastating there. I've seen things done a million times the right way where nobody got hurt, and it fucking gets over. And the way Biff and Dave Chris did this one, they did like a German on the outside where he more or less bumped on the apron from the floor, like, and, you know, went back to the floor. It looked like he more or less took like the shoulder on the apron, you know what I mean? So it looked like that type of thing, but it looked awesome. The way he did it, it looked awesome, at least from my angle. So good match, though. And that, you know, next match you had Aeroform versus the Catalyst. It was an okay match. I've seen Aeroform in the past. I'm pretty sure they were in ROH or somewhere. I was watching at some point or another. They're definitely good aerial wise. Flip Kendrick, I think his name is. I know the dude's name is Flip, but I think he's got to stop going. You want to see a flip before he does some shit. That shit couldn't sound any cornier. It sounds fucking horrendous. You want to see a flip? Like, don't do that. Come on, man. You're talented. You don't need to go and do that shit. So, you know, it was good.
I mean, I think it could have been a little better. You know, there was a lot of spots and different things in there. Just missed something to kind of pull it together. It's very possible, like, a rematch between these two teams. This shit would be amazing. I mean, it was just, I don't know if it's a lack of chemistry or whatever, but it was just a little off. But again, I mean, good. Not a bad match. You know, that's that. Next up was Nevaeh versus Kimberly. Ends in a double pin. You know, I don't know. Like, I keep trying to say that I just don't know what the women's matches that are going on and what they're trying to do with them. I'm just not sure. I don't know. Next up was I don't know versus I'm not sure. Two guys I had the volume kind of low, and I don't know who either one of these fucking guys are. They had their offense was kind of crazy. You know, a lot of their move shit was that kind of offense where it looked like they had a bunch of moves, but they didn't practice them as much as they should have. They just looked kind of sloppy. And again, I don't know who either one of these guys are. They might be very good. With no prior knowledge of these guys and then just getting thrown way high on the card like that, I didn't know what to think of it. So that was that. Next up was G's versus Caleb Conley. That was a pretty good match. Didn't really have a problem with it. Good stuff. I don't know what I'll say. Next up was Fox and Strickland versus Cologne and Andrew Everett. It was supposed to be the guy who gets pinned is not in the now I got to remind you guys because I did this last year, but I called that show that's happening on Saturday Dancing with the Stars because of the initials, and also I'll go a little further into with the names of these things in a minute. But, yeah, so they would not be in the Dancing with the Stars ladder match if they got pinned. So it turns out that, first off, this match is fucking incredible. I mean, it's just nonstop fucking action, unbelievable amount of spots, all done really fucking well. Shane Strickland hit some, like, fucking... I don't know if you want to call it roaring or tornado or fuck. Well, anyway, like a roaring bitch slap. Like just like a 360 bitch slap. It should look cool. But overall, I mean, just a really, really good match. Too many spots to even start naming or anything. It was just a lot of fun to watch. I like this match. And you know, being a DQ because he came in with he hit dude with the ladder. Don't really know where to go with that. I have no idea. I've never been big on CZW having DQs, especially in that fashion, because there's there's a ladder being brought in, especially when it's like, this is the match to see who's going to, I mean, at least start out. I mean, if you're going to do this with CZW and call shit DQs and call other shit not DQs, then you need to announce that this is a no DQ match or CZW rules match or, you know, ultraviolet rules, or announce whatever when there's something else going on in the ring. And we'll definitely get right back to that in just like a match. But so anyway, it ends up it's going to be a four-way, which, I mean, this being a preview of that, this type of shit at a ladder, it's going to be fucking incredible. That right there will be the, you know, price of admission, price of iPay-per-view, whatever you want to call it. That four-way ladder match at Dancing with the Stars is going to be fucking fantastic. It really is. So, all right. Then next up you got The world title on the line, Shane Hollister against Drew Gulak. This was, to me, this was just me, really drawn out and just bored me. Just completely bored me, completely tuned out. I love Shane Hollister's offense. I think a lot of his stuff is really innovative, usually really like draws me into the match. Drew Gulak has that slow, methodical, you know, work style. And I tune out, you know. He does everything that he does very well. I'm just on a lot of matches and on a lot of occasions just not into it. This, to me, is the reason why I'm not into him being world champion. Because I think the CZW needs to be represented by somebody who's going to work the CZW style that's going to pop the fans. Even if you have a heel, you know, working, you're going to have him working the guys that's still going to have that CZW style that's going to pop the fans. I don't think this is it. I don't think it's it. I don't think anyone's going to buy that DVD because of Drew Gulak versus Shane Hollister. I don't think any tickets are going to be bought because of that. On the next show, they're having Drew Gulak versus Chris Dickinson. Again, I don't think anyone's buying a DVD because of that. I don't think anyone's buying a ticket because of that. And I'm sorry, I don't have a problem with that match existing at all on the card. I think there's absolutely a place for either one of those matches on the cards. I just don't think the world title should be on it. I just don't. I mean, Drew has accomplished a ton. He's been, you know, a loyal CCW guy for all these years. I don't doubt for one second that he's earned whatever spot that he gets. But personally, as far as I'm concerned, like with the world title, I don't think that's a draw. I don't think it's something that I don't think it's a good move personally. I just don't, because again, the style of work or whatever kind of slows things down. I mean, you come off of that huge fucking spot fest and everything else, and now you got your world championship, and I don't know. Like, I couldn't wait for the next thing to happen. I was just like, this is, all right. Like, you shouldn't be, your world title match should surely not be a piss break match. It just shouldn't. And again, I'm sure there's many people that absolutely love the match, love that style. And that's why I say I 100% agree that there should be a place on the card for those matches. I don't know. I'm not so much for the world title being on something like that. You know, so many times too, like the world title would be a death match, or the world title would be, you know, hardcore stiff. I mean, you also had like, I mean, look at all this time with Masada. You had him, you know, in so many hardcore stuff, death matches, this and that, but you also had his matches against Generico, which were, you know, spots all over the place and, you know, hard hitting, fast paced, you know, whether it was Masada working, you know, pop the crowd deathmatch type stuff, or Masada working hard hitting, you know, strike fest and spots and this and that. It was both type of matches that would excite the crowd with the world title on the line. I don't feel like this is something we're going to get. I just don't. That's, you know, my opinion on that. And I mean, I like Drew as a person, and yeah, I think he's a really cool dude. You know, talked to him for years and stuff. I like the dude. He worked his fucking ass off to get to be as good as he is in the ring. So I'm really not trying to take anything away from him, but that's just how I feel about that title picture and the way it looks on the card. And, you know, just to push your company that way, I just don't agree with it. Next up, you had Tommy Dreamer versus Ron Mathis. I really, really don't give a shit about Tommy Dreamer anymore. I just don't. I mean, the dude's in worse shape than he was over the years. He could still work, but I really don't give a shit about him anymore. It's done. I mean, Ron Mathis has his points where he He impresses me, and I mean, this match was actually, you know, one where he looked really good. But again, not the match before that, but the match before that, DQ. This match, chairs brought in, trash cans brought in. Ref does the whole same thing, like, no, no, don't do that. But chairs used, garbage can used, this and that. No DQ. So, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, this is the type of shit that looks stupid. You know, when, you know, 2 matches ago you had a DQ because someone brought a ladder in. And 2 matches later, they bring in that. And there was no announcement of this match is the ultra-violent rules. Unless I didn't hear that shit. Sure as hell didn't, I didn't hear, and I tried to, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it is what it is there. But, then, next up we had, DJ Hyde and Jake Crist, and, I just, this fell completely flat to me. You know, nothing against Jake because, you know, this isn't even his style of match. I thought he did well for what it was supposed to be. But I don't feel like this was even made or designed to really pop the crowd or wow anybody or sell a DVD. And this is kind of like my feeling on this. Like I said, Deja Vu 1, there was really, I don't think there was a better no rope barbed wire match in the history of CZW. There's a lot of other really good ones. And, you know, Mondo Gage in Delaware, I forget what show that was. That was really good. Gage Thumbtack Jack, fucking great stuff. Gage Drake. There were a lot of them that were really, really good. To me, Lobo Zandig, Deja Vu 1, didn't get any better than that. It just didn't. I mean, it just... It had the suspense, it had the brutality, and, it, you know, your holy shit moments and all that, it just felt fucking dangerous. These matches these days, they're just put together to just be enough of a no-rope barbed wire match to call it a no-rope barbed wire match. But I don't think it's designed to pop the crowd. I don't think that there's something, you know, a discussion where the guys are sitting in the back with fucking DJ going, all right, what special are we going to do? What are we going to do in this no rope barbed wire match that people haven't seen in the no rope barbed wire match? What is the spot that people are going to be talking about? What exactly are we going to do to innovate this? What are we going to do to step this up? I don't think that discussion goes on. And I think that's the problem. Because if you're not trying to do something better, or you're not trying to wow the crowd, or sell a DVD, or give a reason why this match is going to go down as something somebody remembers, other than, oh yeah, they used barbed wire, then you shouldn't be doing it. You shouldn't be doing it. Like I said, I don't think every classic CZW show needs to be a yearly fucking event. I don't. Deja Vu. I mean, that's real catchy to just keep using. But the fact of the matter is the first one hasn't been outdone or even matched. So can you just stop it and leave it at the fuck of what it is? Night of Infamy. How many of these fucking things have been infamous? The first one was fucking Wife Beater Zandig, fucking I Quit match, fucking unfucking believable. A lot of the Night of Infamy shows have been top notch. And it's obviously the lead up to Cage of Death show. But does it need to be Night of Infamy? Because the first one was the Night of Infamy because it was Wifebeater's retirement. It was this, you know, big fucking moment. And the match was fucking unreal in the fucking, you know, ECW, CCW arena and all, on top of it. But I think you lose a lot of credibility when you try to live up to these things. And, I mean, to name things after other things, obviously the first thing that sparks, you know, someone's imagination or their mind is going to be, oh, well, that's named after that. I mean, you know, if someone said, yo, this is the new Hummer, and then you see, like, it's actually a fucking motorcycle. You're going, what the fuck is that? Like, dude, you said Hummer. I expected this big ass truck. I'm like, no. Well, this is what we're doing this year, though. Like, we just, you know, we like the name. Like, you don't fucking do that. I mean, I don't know. I personally think that, like I said, you should be trying to step your game up. You should be trying to step the stipulation up. You know what's been done in this company before. Fucking DJ, you went out of your way to own the brand rather than just buying a fucking ring and starting your own Fed. You bought something from somebody that wasn't trademarked. I mean, from what I've heard, CZW wasn't fucking trademarked. You could have bought the fucking letters and the fucking and a ring from anybody and never cut Zandig a check. But you needed the name, you needed his approval, you needed to try to be the brand and all that. And I don't see where that's what you're putting across, because you're going right in the direction of something that you have no plans on fucking reaching the goal of. I want to be this. I don't want to be Deja Vu. I want to have Night of Infamy. But like, dude, why? Fucking why do you need to do that? You want to create your own brand, create your own brand. You never needed to buy the letters to begin with, other than to piggyback off the fan base, who's going to be looking for a certain thing because you bought the fucking letters. But you didn't, you know, you got your own ideas, you know, you want to have Gay Book, you know, you had a bunch of different things going on, but it doesn't add up to CZW's brand of CZW. Like, you just cut it out with the bullshit. And honestly, I've said it time and time again, no one needs to see you on the fucking main event. No one likes it. No one enjoys it. I don't know who's patting you on the back and going, great job, DJ. Yeah, we couldn't have done it without you. Fucking, yeah, you're the reason. You're the reason people show up. Like, dude, you're out of your fucking mind. No one wants to see you in the main event of anything. Fucking nothing. What do you think you did that was so fucking amazing in that match? And before we go out on a limb, it's like, you try to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I want to be entertained by wrestlers. And if you can't entertain me as a wrestler, then that's your bad. That ain't me fucking needing to go train and be a wrestler because I don't like your shit. I don't like your shit. That's it. And, I mean, that's just always been my opinion on it. So, you know. Well, speaking of DJ, I think I mentioned before, I'm not positive, but I just had to. He's got like a 7.5-hour shoot interview coming out at some point from RF Video. And, of course, who's interviewing him? Oh, Brett Lauderdale again. Every time I hear Brett Lauderdale is interviewing someone, the first thing that pops into my mind is that old Slick Rick quote.
Pussies ain't supposed to speak.
You know? And sure enough, they keep giving him the mic. They keep giving him the fucking interviews. They keep letting him run around fucking interview people. So, you know, I don't know if that shit costs any money, if he paid for that shit to be made, if there's some kind of return that's expected to be made. But I cannot imagine people going out and purchasing a 7.5-hour, and I've heard it might even be longer, DJ Hyde shoot interview. Who gives a fuck? So, yeah, that's that show. Like I said, you want to go out and get the show for that that tag match, have at it. As far as getting the show for a no rope barbed wire match, save your fucking money. It's just unnecessary. Anyway, for the Dancing with the Stars show, you got a four-way ladder match. AR Fox defending the Wired. And you know what? Fuck the Wired title. Fuck that shit. Why, for the sake of a TV show, we're trying to push a TV show, which I think doesn't even exist anymore, does it? You take the fucking junior heavyweight title that had a storied history of fucking Trent Acid holding it. You had fucking Winger holding it over in Japan, fucking came back over here. You had fucking all sorts of things happen with that junior heavyweight title that meant something. You take this fucking multicolored fucking rainbow belt, and that's the junior heavyweight title. And the other thing doesn't exist anymore, nor do I think the fucking Wired TV thing does. Does it? Or is that just like an internet thing? So that internet thing is now just a junior title, and that's supposed to be taken just as seriously? I mean, you have this incredible talent fucking busting their ass, And why not be the fucking belt that was defended by Trent Acid or, you know, all the people that have held it in the past? Why the fuck would we completely drop that shit and take this fucking Fruit Loop belt and just fucking dance around with it and fuck that? We'll just, you know, get rid of the belt because we unified it. Unified and get rid of that Fruit Loop belt. Fucking Christ sakes. And I hope at some point this whole thing is rectified and you get someone that wins that Wired title, gets on the mic and goes, fuck that. I'll be back with a real fucking belt. I'm taking this piece of shit, throwing it in the fucking garbage, and I'm going to get the fucking belt that was held by, and, you know, and start listing the fucking, the CZW history of, you know, junior heavyweight champions and really, you know, get into it. And this is the reputation I want. This is the axe I'm trying to follow. The Wired TV, whatever. I'm not worried about TV. I'm worried about greatness. And some of the people who are great is these Trent Acids and, you know, these, and just really try to get into it. And from there, give that fucking title back, you know, its identity, because fucking Wired title. You motherfuckers must be wired on something with these fucking ideas you come up with, for Christ's sake. I don't understand it. Just same shit with the fucking Iron Man title. That, you know, they turned it into fucking, you know, he had fucking Lobo. When I first started going, Lobo fucking gorilla pressed off of the fucking, whatever, the soccer chair thing, the fucking ref soccer chair stand in Sewell, fucking tables set on fire, barbed wire tables set on fire in like a pyramid down below. Wifebeater's got him up. He fucking grabs the title before Wifebeater throws him into fucking flaming tables while he's holding the fucking, the title, and they're trying to yank him out of the barbed wire while he's still burning and shit. That's what the fucking, the Iron Man title was. They end up letting fucking, they reinvent it. They make it more of like a wrestling hardcore. They do the whole, tournament thing for it. They got Trent representing in there and all that. And then they end up doing it in an angle, Sami Callihan went in and calling it the new horror title. That's fine for an angle. But to then change the fucking history on the website to only reflect everything is the new horror title. Lobo actually got fucking gorilla pressed off that shit to win the new horror title, if you look the motherfucking results up. Like, some kind of cute move where history was rewritten because Sammy had it in an angle and shit. And then ended up fucking completely abandoning that title altogether. Does anybody else see where this is fucking retarded and completely shits on the history of the company that needed to exist so much that someone had to hand somebody money to own those letters, but every bit of the history is just being, like, fucking tossed aside? I don't understand that shit. It really gets on my motherfucking nerves. And then, this is, I think, the eighth year we've done a Chris Cash show. You know, and all due respect to Chris Cash, you know, great dude, super intense performer, all about CZW, energy out the ass, was willing to do anything out there to fucking pop that crowd. All due respect. This has now been, I think, 8 years. CZW didn't actually even officially fucking host a Trent Acid show. Acid Fest was kind of like co-signed by CZW, you know, CZW's ring, whatever, helped put it together, whatever the case you want to call it. But it was never like, CZW presents our annual fucking every, you know, this month out of the year, this is our Trent Acid show. Not even a fucking once was their main CZW show a fucking Trent Acid show, who was quite possibly the biggest fucking star to ever wrestle for CZW in the history of the company. So again, not to shit on Chris Cash, but at a certain point, can we stop? Can we fucking stop? Because you do like your afternoon show that's like, hey, shout out to Trent. Hey, shout out to Brain Damage. Shout out to JC. Okay, yep, all right. So let's roll out the carpet for like the eighth annual fucking Chris Cash show. I mean, I know, like, a part of that's got to sound fucking disrespectful to Cash or something like that. But I'm sorry. Other people, if we're going to do it for one, we should be doing it for all. And, you know, I complained about this shit a lot last year, too,
and then they did some bullshit where they're like, this isn't just for cash, this is for all our other fallen guys, like Trent and Bailey and this and this. And they're saying that shit with a big-ass Chris Cash banner strewn across a ladder in the middle of the ring, and then the fucking Chris Cash music playing throughout the whole fucking thing, and then fucking, I think, somebody pulled like an acid move and shit sometime during the thing. It might have been Ruckus or Marino, or somebody pulled an acid move like during the show. But like other than that, like that was it, dude. And the fucking the main event still tribute Chris Cash ladder match. Fucking, you know, give it a fucking rest. I mean, let the man rest. We did fucking ample fucking tribute to the dude. Any fucking wrestlers out there want to pay personal tribute in any match, in any, you know, spot, in any, you know, finish or anything, any shout out, any wristband, armband, whatever the fuck you want to do to pay your respects, I understand. But for the company to pay yearly respect to one man and pretty much let the others fly and maybe only give you so much as a mention, when guys like I said, Trent Acid fucking has built the fucking company. As far as the wrestling is concerned in CZW, Trent Acid built the motherfucker. I mean, obviously, death matches and shit, ultraviolence, fucking gave the company the majority of its identity. But if it wasn't for Trent Acid doing what the fuck he did wrestling-wise in that company, there wouldn't be a fucking CZW. It would still be considered a fucking backyard fed. Everyone wants to go out there and say, oh, DJ's done so much. It's not just a hardcore fed now. It wasn't just a hardcore fed then. Trent Acid was still the best fucking junior heavyweight in the fucking, pretty much in the business. You know what I mean? So I have a hard time with the revisionist history, and I have a hard time with only one man getting the respect when, you know, this is year after year after year after year, and the most you'll get is like, oh, yeah, no, it's for those guys, too. Anyway, play that fucking music again. And another thing, fucking bring out the ladders, because that's how Cash would have wanted it. Like, all right, all right. So anyway, I'll be that dickhead now, I guess. James Strickland, Alex Colon, and Andrew Everett challenge AR Fox in a four-way dance for the Wired title and the fucking, and then ladder match. It's going to be off the fucking chain. Drew Gulak versus Chris Dickinson. I already told you my opinion on that. World Tag Team Championship rematch. The Blackout versus the Osirian Portal. The thing that they need to do in this one, though, is they need to make a no DQ stipulation, or a stipulation that if there's a DQ on the Blackout side that they lose the titles. Something like that, because of the way the last match ended, you have to stem off that into something else that rectifies the last outcome. I mean, you know, you kick the ref in the dick, big heel move, completely understandable. I'm not against it whatsoever. But then to just be like, all right, now we're going to have another match. Well, then kick him in the dick again. Fuck it. Nobody said shit about it. You know what I mean? Like, ding, fucking kick in the dick. Everybody goes to the back. That's it. Still have the titles. Play our music. That's exactly what should happen if they don't make some kind of stipulation that makes some kind of sense where you can't go do that again. The next match is Intergender Lifestyle Collision. Pepper Parks and Cherry Bomb versus Greg Excellent and Candice LeRae. Candice LeRae is phenomenal. Really, really looking forward to seeing her work in CZW for the first time. And, that's great. I mean, the stuff that she's done in PWG is amazing, and definitely looking forward to seeing what she does. Drew Blood versus Lucky 13, and the war continues. Match that should be good. That could be very good. So we'll see what goes on there. Ultraviolent Rules match is Danny Havoc versus Rory Mondo. I'd imagine they're gonna do some silly shit in this match. Definitely. Next match you have Four Locos, Azrael and Bandito Jr. versus David Starr and JT Dunn. They had that match last month against each other. David Starr and JT Dunn was good. Great opener. So now they're going to team up against Azrael and Bandito. Tag team grudge match of Sozio, or now Zung, as people would know him, and Biff Busick
versus Ohio's For Killers and Dave and J. Chris. So, yeah, I mean, pretty solid card. I don't see any reason why you shouldn't, you know, get this. Most likely going to be watching this live Saturday night. Yeah, I look forward to it. And that's about that. Yeah, definitely ran pretty long on a football thing. You know, did enough for the CZW thing. I think that's pretty much all I'm going to do this week. And I guess I'll get my plugs. Wrestling Soup is trying out a new thing. So I think right now they're doing Sundays. They were on past Sunday, and I think they're just trying out the Sunday thing for now. So check them out on Sundays. Sports Den is on now, or was on earlier, or something like that. They're on tonight. I'm sure they're going to be talking about the first week of football in great depth. And I'm sure the baseball is still happening. Check out Stern Nation tomorrow night. Women Love Wrestling. Check out the Shiznet. My girl Yolanda over there tomorrow night. And, a lot of big things. Next week I'll be back with more football. See if I bring a guest with me or, you know, we'll see what we do. Think that's about all I got. I'll check you motherfuckers out next week. Peace.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Kill 'em all. Back on top. Think about it. Fuck Hulk Hogan.
Well, ain't that a motherfucker?
But you go to the back and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio. And we're taking over.